You're listening to Black People Go to Therapy Too, a podcast about people of color and their experiences in therapy. Don't forget to subscribe and spread the word that we're now available on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, and Spotify. Now let's begin our session. Hey guys, we're back with a new episode of Black People Go to Therapy Too. And this time we have one of my good friends, Byron, joining us today. Byron, you want to say hello?
What's up, everybody?
And this is also the first of maybe many, but due to circumstances around the corona that's out right now and social distancing, we are doing some telepodcasting. So yeah, we're going to see how this goes. Hopefully y'all can hear us clearly. Hopefully there's not much of a change in our typical way of recording this, but we can go ahead and get started. Byron, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, your identity, age, gender, ethnicity, all that stuff?
Perfect. Cool. Yeah. So I'm a 28-year-old man, black man, raised in Kentucky, straight, cisgender, go by his, him, pronouns, he. I can never think of them all at once, especially when I'm on the spot. Like, I feel like I'm in front of a class.
His,
right. So we, she, I, they, me. So, but yes. But yeah, that's basically how I identify myself.
Cool. And you said you grew up in Kentucky. What brought you to Chicago?
So have you ever lived in Kentucky?
I mean, I'm from Southern Illinois, so I can imagine,
worse than Kentucky, actually. But I actually love Kentucky, but I just wanted to, move to a bigger city, especially after I graduated. Chicago was the biggest, closest city that I wouldn't have to just like uproot my entire life and throw everything in the wind and get to. So it was in like New York or LA, which is like 14 or so plus hours. Yeah.
I'll ask you the question that a lot of people ask me, because I said the same thing. Like, I want to move to Chicago because I'm far away enough from family where they can't just pop up on me, but close enough where if I get homesick or I want to like go down for something, it's easy. But people always ask me, why not St. Louis?
What? No, they don't.
They always ask, why not St. Louis? Like, and I have a similar reaction, like, no shade to St. Louis, but I just don't see it as a comparable city to like Chicago, New York, LA. But I don't know if that was something that people in Kentucky always ask, like, why not St. Louis? Because it's a city, but it's closer, but it's really not.
No, I would have never in my mind thought about St. Louis. If anything, people ask me like, why not Atlanta or something like that? But St. Louis, that's just completely off the map. Like,
I'm gonna have some of my friends drag me. because they're from there. But yeah, anyways, just getting into our typical agenda. Do you mind telling me a little bit about why you first sought out therapy?
Oh yeah, definitely. I would actually love to tell you about it. So I was working this job that I like hated. When I tell you, like, every fiber of my being loathe this job. I'm trying to use every big vocab word to explain the hate for this gig I had. And I literally couldn't take it. Like, I literally was getting ready to lose my mind. And like a lot of people, like when I would talk to a lot of people that didn't work there, like my friend and other support systems, they didn't understand because, it's a salary gig, raise every year, great medical benefits, bonuses, just different things, overtime, all these other things, but they just wasn't getting it. So I was like, okay, bet. I'm going to have to do something because I'm literally losing my mind. Like, throughout the week, I will wake up and it would just be miserable. Saturday, I would feel great. Sunday at about 6 o'clock when the sun started going down, it'd be like, Lord, here we go again. Like, really questioning, is this my existence? What am I doing here? Everything.
That Sunday dread.
Exactly. It made everything like super, super hard. So like, I started to notice all these things going on in my life. Like usually when things happen to me, I would say I've always had this little bounce back. Now, I don't know if that bounce back was just repression and I just couldn't repress this because it was every day or what, but I just didn't have it. I just couldn't be like, okay, yep, I'm back in a good mood today. Let's get it or whatever. It just was always starting to affect everything. And one thing that I started to notice is that like when one area of your life is really going down, it starts uncovering all those other ones that I had previously repressed before. So like everything was just going down to the ground. Like, so I was like, I got to do something. I noticed these signs. I'm smart enough to notice them. So let me go try to find some sort of help. So I sought out therapy.
Cool. And what were some of the stigmas or misconceptions that you feel like you've heard about therapy? Because I know there are tons, especially with people of color, especially Black people. And if you come from a religious background, you know, even more stigmas and misconceptions about the idea or act of going to therapy. What were some of the ones that you heard?
Right. So I always, even no matter what, people be like, oh, you know, have you tried God? Like, you know, that's one of the biggest things. Like, you know, people will be like, I've got my gospel CD and then church on Sunday and Wednesday, and they'll get me through. Like, literally, I've heard those things or whatever. And, you know, I always say God created therapists. Like, he created this whole profession and everything. So you might want to try it out. So that was one of them. Plenty of them are just like, you know, whenever you tell someone you're in therapy, they give you this gasp and this look like, you are you all right? Like, they just know that like you're about to just be you're about to die, you're about to go crazy, murder's on the way, suicide, something like
immediately. You're so unwell.
Like, exactly, like they treat you almost as bad as they treat you if you think you have corona. So
seriously, it is crazy because like I too come from kind of that religious background where people are like, yeah, all we can do is pray. It's like, no, all we can do is go to therapy and then, pray too. But like, I used to throw back the scripture, you know, faith without works is dead. So like, I have all the faith in God, but like, if I'm not creating something, like if I'm not doing anything, if I'm just sitting there and praying and being like, oh God, like cure me of this depression, like, where's the work in that? Like, what am I doing to like help myself get out of this? And so, yeah, that's great that you knew like, okay, I need to actually go see somebody. And yes, therapists were created by God. Therapy is created by God. Like, that's the purpose of it. That's why it's there.
And the funny thing is, the job that I hated so much actually gave me like free therapy sessions, which even prompted me even more to go. So, I mean, the job I still hate to this day, but it definitely helped out in areas.
Was that through an EAP?
Can you define EAP for me?
Yes. And so actually the last episode, I could not come up with this term until the end of the episode. So it's employee assistance program. And so that's usually what companies offer like 4 to 5 therapy sessions through. And it's usually like packaged with your benefits or like your ADP or whatever you use to view all that.
Yeah. Yep. It was definitely through that.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, for listeners, if you have an EAP, again, Employee Assistance Program, I think I'm getting that right. That's what you can look into that has like, I think some jobs even have up to 10 sessions. I know typically you hear more like 3 to 5. But even if you're in school, like I went to the Chicago school, or I go to the Chicago school, they offer a sort of like EAP, even though you're not employed there. But it's like 3 sessions per issue. So you can get kind of creative with some of those and be like, okay, I want to talk about this issue for 3 sessions and maybe change it up a little bit just to be able to work the system to your benefit. So like, also check into your schools. They may have offer some services like that too.
And that's definitely mine was kind of like that three issues per like 3 sessions per issue. So yeah, I was able to take a benefit from that too. So yeah, it was dope. And what's really cool about it is you can get like really specific. Like, I was able to be like, okay, I want a counselor in Chicago, of course. I was like, I would rather have a Black woman or a Black male. Then like go down and like literally go down the list with you. They'll read you like their specialties, qualifications, everything. Some of them have like religious backgrounds if you still want to connect with somebody who does value spirituality and therapy at the same level. So it was like really customizable. Like it was kind of like a Build-A-Bear.
Yeah. So you were on the phone with these people and they basically just matched you to the therapist of your choice.
Pretty
and
much.
And when they were listening to those choices to you, did you feel limited? Did you feel like there were some that sounded like a good therapist? Did you go with any of those? What was that process like for you?
So I feel like when they were going through those, there was some limitations. For example, they couldn't find any Black men. And that's where I wanted to go to first. They were able to find Black women. They were able to find like a few of them. I would say close to like six or so. And then after that, I wanted to, you know, find one close in the area too, because if you know me, you know, I'm late to everything by at least an hour. So like there was no drive. It's called fashionably late. I don't know why that term got thrown out, but it's real. But yeah. So yeah, I'm late by an hour, so I still have to like do things to make sure that I'm able to not set myself up for failure, basically.
Yeah. So proximity and also race, ethnicity was very important to you. Were there any other things that you were looking for to find in a therapist that might have been like difficult or weren't a lot of options?
It was definitely those things included with like they'll mention that they did, counselors deal with race and all those other things. So I was listening for those type of things as well too. Diversity was obviously a word that I was listening for, and just different things like that to make sure that like I could kind of best gauge the competence of the person, even though it's like, okay, I'm just listening. I can like try to figure it out as best as I could.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's also confusing about those calls where they're kind of just throwing people at you and letting you know their specialties. Like a lot of therapists build their own bios, and just because it's in their bio doesn't mean that it's a specialty. And it doesn't mean that like they're up to par to work with, like, for example, diversity is one of those words that just every therapist tries to throw into their bios now. But that doesn't mean that they are used to working with people of color, especially when you have other marginalized identities. Like that diversity means like, okay, yeah, I'm like diverse, and I can work with diverse populations in terms of like white people in the burbs, white people in small towns, different, you know, depression, anxiety, but like diversity when it comes to identities is just always limited with those types of therapists sometimes. So that's also something to keep in mind. Like diversity does not mean that they're going to be good for you just because you're a person of color and they've listed that, but that a lot of times, you know, people just throw these words around because they know that they'll get them more traction, or that they should, you know, they should be a diverse therapist.
Right. It's 2020. If diversity isn't in your bio, then you might as well just go ahead and find another career, especially like, because everybody, that's what everybody's looking for. Like, for example, I got stylist in my Instagram blog, I mean, in my Instagram bio, but Lord knows I've yet to style a single person.
And that's hard. That's what makes the process hard, because like, I don't know about you. Immediately what I did was go to Google and I put in therapists who deal with race issues. Not because I wanted to talk about race issues, but it's, you know, interwoven into the stuff that I talk about. But so many non-POC therapists came up for that. And then I would look at their entire practice and I'd see like no people of color. And I'm like, how, like, how can y'all talk about race issues when you don't even have any therapists of different like races? Like, this is just bizarre.
No one to consult, nothing, like, so yeah, weird.
Yeah. And so going into your experience in therapy, what would you say some of those, let's go with the challenges first. What would you say some of the challenges of therapy were for you?
So the biggest challenge in the world to me was TV and media. So the thing is, you watch a lot, like I watch a lot of TV. I've seen a lot of TV shows that have like counselors and therapists and stuff like that, like it's like sitcoms, and like the counselors in there, they're having a deep conversation, the counselor's giving advice and all this other stuff, And real therapy is nothing like that. Like, your counselor is not going to be in there telling you what to do, like telling you to go left, right, up, down, back. It's going to be literally like you in there talking to them, and they're kind of like acting as like a buffer and a guide. There's silence moments and everything. So like when you first get in there and they not, and you feel like they're not really doing much based off of what you've seen before, it's kind of like, okay, well, I mean, are you a good one or not? Like,
you gonna help me today or not?
Right, exactly. I just told you the problem. Where's the answer? So, when that first happens, you know, that takes you off guard, and that takes a while to get over that. Like, it took me a minute to be like, they are not here to tell me how to live my life. Like, that's for me to do. Of course, they'll jump in if you say anything extremely left field. But other than that, like, they're not getting ready to tell me to quit my job. That's not for them to do or whatever. Even though I'm in there telling them I hate it so much, they're telling me just different things, helping me work through the process and those emotions of what comes out of it, and just different things of what, how I, and helping me make my own decision of what I feel is best and next for me. So that was one of the biggest challenges as well. Another challenge. Go ahead.
Well, I would say really just encouraging that, like, self-determination. Like, TV does make it seem like these therapists are, like, almost your best friend, but still not quite. But they're going to be the person like, oh, yeah, you need to quit that job. Yeah, you deserve better. Yes, you know your worth. Quit that job today. And, like, that is a misconception, because people do show up to therapy and they don't think that they're going to lead the conversation or the session. They just kind of like sit there like, okay, like any other questions for me? But it's like, okay, anything that you want to talk about? Because we're here to work on things that you want to work on, not things that I think you should be working on. Because if I tell you my agenda, you're not going to connect to that. So you're not going to want to be consistent in that. So I think that's important to bring up too. Like, it is not like TV. It is nothing like TV. I mean, I'm sure there are therapists who play that sort of therapist that they see on TV, and I'm not sure that they're effective. Maybe it works for some people, but it definitely doesn't work for me, and it hasn't worked for a lot of my friends
me either,
who talk about their experiences either.
I was really ready to go in there and be like, you know, as a child, I just get into it, like, you know, because on TV they tell me about your childhood and all this other stuff, and I was ready for that, but you know, that just wasn't what it was. Another challenge I think I had for sure was I'm too chummy buddy buddy or whatever, and that meant like in the terms of therapy, I'm in the session like, yeah, like I'm talking and stuff like that too, but like I'm always trying to get a little joke and a little laugh in. I'm always trying to be too relatable and stuff like that, so like that was a challenge, because like, you know, you don't want that line to be crossed between you, like that still there still needs to be some sort of professionalism, no matter how close you feel that you and your therapist or counselor get. And like, I'm always one for like, oh yeah, you know, blur lines, like I live on them. But I think that is a really big challenge for me. It was like, okay, like, yeah, you're cool and you're telling this person all your business, but that's not your friend. So, yeah, and you know, and that's just one of those things of like, if I'm telling somebody all this business, then they've got to be close to me and all this other stuff, and making myself feel more special in my own head. Like, I know they really enjoy my stories and all this other stuff. So, like, yeah, that's pretty much, those were two of the biggest challenges that I faced.
In terms of that, were you like just pulling to know more about your therapist, or was it just like engagement wise, you wanted to hear like more of them joking with you, how you were joking with them?
It was a little bit of both. So like, you know how you can get people to talk about themselves without necessarily them going in. So like, I would say things that like would kind of maybe like, oh, okay, leave the doorway for like, oh yeah, yeah, my son acts the same way. You remind me of this person, like, you know, those little things type deal. Or like I said, my therapist is Black, so I'll relate, bring up something like that's heavy in Black culture that would make them be like, you know what? Yep, I know exactly what that is. So like, just those different type of deals.
Yeah, and those kind of connections are important, I think, to building that rapport, because I don't think anybody wants a therapist who's just like, say you laughing and joking with them and they're just sitting there straight face looking at you like, are you finished? Are you done? Like, Can we continue? But it's, I think it's hard also as a therapist, you know, that side of things, being able to determine, you know, how much should I give, how much should I hold back, and how much, you know, can I let the client know about me without it being like too overbearing, without kind of, you know, stepping outside of my role as a therapist and them as a client too.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you say some of the good outcomes of therapy that you've seen have been?
So first and foremost, one of the biggest things that I've learned, period, is that like a lot of times, a lot of situations that I've been in recently, or like I can mm-hmm. even remember, that I feel like times where I felt like, oh, I'm overreacting or whatever, like look back and be like, dang, I overreacted, or I didn't have to lose my cool like that, or just different things were mm-hmm. situations from my past that I just mm-hmm. didn't address back then, and kind of build up these defense mechanisms that aren't always the case with people. Like mm-hmm. just because someone does something to me now doesn't mean that like it's connected to something back then. Like I was just like constantly in defense and fight mode, like survival mm-hmm. mode 24/7, because I'm like, oh, if somebody does anything that is resemblant of something that's happened before, then I'm exploding mm-hmm. and they can't have any good intent and all this other thing. Mm-hmm. Another
there
thing
goes that repression you were talking about earlier.
It comes back.
You repressed like, it, or you thought you had it packed away, but somebody opened that box a little bit, and you like, it's everything's falling out. Everything's jumping out at that person.
Honestly, and it honestly, what was crazy is that like I think I was acting like it was all packed away, but honestly, it didn't even take much for the floodgates to open, like for me to just lose it. So like that was another thing. Also, counseling just was one thing that I've learned in counseling is that, like, when you say it once out loud, it makes it easier to say it again out loud. Mm-hmm. So when I was able to, like, express things in counseling sessions and have these talks in counseling sessions and that dealt with other people in my life, it made it easier. Not, like, of course, the conversations sometimes were still difficult, but it made it easier for me to be like, I've already said these thoughts before. I've already verbalized them. I know what it sounded like. Mm-hmm. Seen it bounce off another person before, so now I can go into that situation. And of course, we all do that thing in our head where we act out a situation like we know how things are gonna mm-hmm. go from the moment you open your mouth to the moment you close it. But mm-hmm. it just helped me be able to verbalize things and thoughts that I and feelings that I had, and be able to then share them with people outside of that session as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and this is a part of the session where we like to talk about therapist do's and don'ts. This is more so kind of a specific message to therapists, so it can be specific or general, but what would you say therapist do's are? What should therapists make sure that they're doing?
A therapist should definitely make sure that they're making their client feel comfortable, and by that just honestly not expecting too much from them, not expecting like them to go in and like not overwhelmed, like making them feel like they're overwhelmed on situations. I know before I had kind of felt like in therapy once before, I felt that I was just like, oh, I don't know, I was overwhelmed by the moment. When I think, and like, I don't know if it was just me not understanding therapy and like being young and like just trying it out, or if I don't know if it was them, but it just was one of those things where I felt so overwhelmed by being in the session. It was like a disconnect. Mm-hmm. Also, another do is to, you know, not be judgmental. Of course, everybody mm-hmm. like, you know, that poker face is important, I think, unless, like we said, someone's making a joke or something, you can laugh. I do think those make things great, is when they actually do laugh and act like you're a human being and things like that. And so, yeah, I just think that those are like the main things.
Mm-hmm. And I like that judgment one, because people are sharing vulnerable things, and a lot of times therapists haven't experienced everything that their clients have. So being able to make sure that, you know, one, that you aren't a judgmental person in this role, and two, that you can control your face. Like, don't let that face crack, because if you're a therapist and someone is sharing something that they've maybe like carried shame around, and they say it to you and your face cracks, or you like flinch or something, like, they're going to feel like they can't share that anymore. That, okay, yeah. I shared it once with this person who should be, you know, used to hearing these types of things. And now, you know, they're flinching. So I don't want to say this again. So that's
I would definitely ask for a refund.
Yeah. Like, if you flinch, I want my money judged. Back. And you I thought you were going to accept me as I am. Do no harm, okay?
I was like, give me that check back. Oh, another thing that's important is psychoeducation. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying, you know, go in there and give me the whole spiel of what it means to be a counselor and all these other things. But, you know, just kind of explain the counseling process. Sometimes, like, especially mm-hmm. people that are over stigmatized and everything in community. Sometimes they just need to understand what it is or whatever. Yeah. Because people will leave, like, and never come back to counseling because it's like, I sat in there and talked for an hour and all they did was nod their head. Like, I'm done. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that part is really important. And that goes back to your kind of idea of like the misconceptions that you had of therapy. Mm-hmm. You thought it was going to be like TV, and TV doesn't show the first couple of sessions where literally the therapist is just learning about you. So it might be like an interview. It might be tons of questions about your history, your family history, your mental health history, like all these things for like the first three sessions, which sometimes people don't even get to the second session. So they leave there thinking like, yeah, I don't like therapy. No, they just asked a lot of questions. They didn't say anything. I didn't take anything away from it. I didn't learn anything today. When really, you know, to get to the meat and potatoes of the work that you're going to be doing, you know, it takes after that, you know, 3 to 5+ sessions before you start doing that work too.
Right. Because, you know, people are ready to go in there and be healed and told mm-hmm. that they're like, I don't have time. I've been stressed out enough. I'm supposed to go in here, come in here today and walk out tomorrow a better person.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in terms of the don'ts, what should therapists not do?
Don't give me too much about your family. And because that's just me personally, because I'll fall into it. Like, I will fall right into it. Uh-huh. Like, and we'll be talking about cookouts and everything. And hell, I might end up with an invitation to it. And so then there goes the relationship, the professional mm-hmm. relationship. So, yeah, don't give me too much about family. Another dude is like, I don't know. One time a counselor had told me that I was going to school for a degree, and they said, no, you should go to be a lawyer. I see that you would be a really good lawyer. And okay. I was just like, this is literally 3 days after the ad drop date. There's no going back. Like, they're not going to give me my money back. Like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, like, don't try to tell me. Like, and then the thing is, like, that's where it comes back to, like, them a counselor telling you what to do, and if it's not good advice, then mm-hmm. like it could be detrimental. Like, you just mm-hmm. told me to literally change up my whole career, go thousands and trillions of dollars in debt, and then for me to get there, not like that's a huge life decision for you to tell me, like, don't put that vision on me mm-hmm. or whatever. And like I said, the ad drop date had already passed, so I don't even know why you said mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, so it sounds like the don'ts are for therapists, like, please have set boundaries. Like, don't tell me what I should be doing, especially like for them to say, no, you shouldn't be doing what you're doing, you should be doing this, is, I think, kind of an abuse of power. Because, you know, as much as therapists want kind of a power with dynamic in the session, as a therapist, you do have some power, and people are looking to you and they're pulling for a lot of times to have feedback. If not clear answers about what they should do. So to use that moment to say, like, no, don't do this, do this. I mean, it's only gonna, one, maybe cause you to not be accountable if you do decide to switch and you fail at it. You're gonna be mm-hmm. like, well, my therapist told me to do this and it didn't work out, but I have like no control over that because they told me to do it. So yeah, it goes back to really allowing clients to come to those decisions on their own and being there to support them, you know, either way with whatever they decide to go with.
Yeah, definitely. Because I don't even know what I would look like in orientation. So why are you here today? My therapist said that this is for me. So
it's like, why law? Because my therapist thinks I'm good at law.
All right.
And your dissertation is all about why my therapist said I should go into law.
Right, I was on the track to be a week away from being a doctor, but now I'm getting ready to be a lawyer. Like, back to start. So,
And then one of the most important things that you've learned or taken away from therapy, if you had to think of one specific thing, what would you say you've taken away from therapy?
One thing, if I had to sum it all up, is that therapy can be a really safe space. A lot of times, like when you think about therapy and stuff like that, like at the end of the day, you always have these conceptions about people, like, okay, well, I can go in here and tell my business, but like you got this little guard up because it's like there's still another person, you know. It's still telling my business and things that I've never told anyone, or only a few people know, or I prefer for people not to know about me or whatever. So it was really refreshing to actually be able to go into a space and be like, I can actually do this. Of course, it's not one of those things where you just hop in there and feel the moment instantly. Like, I can actually do this. But like eventually, I feel around about session three, I was like, okay, you know, I can give a little bit more, like, you know.
Yeah,
And
I
it
can get
felt
into this.
more right, you know. More as time went on, you got more and more comfortable with it. So like, it can definitely be a safe space if you let it.
Yeah, and that goes into the next question of why would you recommend therapy for people like us?
I recommend therapy for people like us, because Black people automatically, I feel like when our reparations package should come, we should automatically get therapy sessions. Like, for real, because being Black, first off, you get every bad statistic known to man put on you. Then on top of that, you have post-traumatic stress disorder. Then on top of that, like, you just deal with all these things constantly in life that, like, regular everyday run-of-the-mill problems get turned times 10 to 1,000. Even things that like are preached to us as being good, like, oh yeah, you know, to be Black, you got to be twice as good to get half as much. Kind of put this all or nothing stereotype. Either I'm twice as good or I'm trash or whatever. So that we're constantly under a microscope, constantly on our radar, constantly like in comparison. So like, it's just one of those things that like we have to work through all that, like it, because it really does bog us down. Like, it takes us out to be in a, like, in every space we go into, it feels like we have to start over from one. Like, oh, okay, they see me as a Black person. How are they going to take how I look every single space or whatever? And then after you have a hard day at work, you just got to make it home by the grace of God, because if you get pulled over sometimes, it might be the last time. So, like, just those constant things running your mind, and in addition to not having access to food and healthcare, and then your family is also going through trauma and struggles based off of these past systems. So like, it's a lot.
Yeah, I just think of the trauma, like the generational trauma, the way that trauma is just passed down from our grandparents and our great grandparents to our parents and to us, and the way that we walk around with that and think that like we're not affected by it is just, completely crazy, because we are. In all the spaces that we take up, we're wondering how people are viewing us, and we're also carrying the weight of, okay, I got to show them that, this is how it is to be Black, or that I'm not like the statistics that are wrong. But really just always feeling like you can't even fully be yourself because you have to portray someone that is going to be deemed like acceptable by white
Exactly.
culture or, the system. So absolutely, yes, trauma is why we need therapy so much. And I think overall, just not one that not enough people mention is like also religious trauma. This idea that if we are going to therapy, or if we are experiencing depression or anxiety or some other, mental health issues, that our faith isn't strong enough. And I know that's a difficult one for people to navigate too, because they're like, okay, I've been praying, but like, I don't want to say it's not working, but I feel like I need more help. But if I go seek out more help, is that like not having enough faith? And like, that in itself is like a traumatic experience and only brings about more anxiety. So 100% agree with you. That's why people like us, people of color, Black people especially, really need to take advantage of therapy if we have access to it. And if not, find resources where we can tap into it to really do some exploration.
And that religious trauma piece that you just spoke on was super deep. You might want to go ahead and write that down to start working on your dissertation. Like, you need to go on tour with that one.
I know it all too well, being a pastor's son. So yeah, I know that one. We'll probably get to that one in one of the sessions that I'm in, but
I'm weak.
And then before we get out of here, I always want to do a self-care plug. So how do you practice self-care? What is that thing that restores lost energy that helps you kind of tackle your daily tasks and accomplish, you know, what you've set out to do?
Right. I would say the thing that definitely like rejuvenates me is I make time every day to do one thing that I truly have interest in before I go to bed. Like, sometimes my schedule is crazy. I'll leave the house at like 7 o'clock in the morning and won't get home until 10 p.m. And when you get there, you just want to get in bed or whatever. But I don't like giving up my whole day to everybody else in the world and not leaving anything for me. So if that means I'll watch a TV show, I'll read a few pages in a book, I'll write some, I'll do anything that I deem as something that I like just for me. Like, I have to do something one a day for me. Working out, even though like I, you know, I enjoy the idea of it, but I can't stay consistent for some reason. I'd be in the gym right now if it went for Corona. Dang.
Yeah, same. Me too. Yes. But yeah, so in terms of that too, I think it is important. You kind of mentioned something I've been thinking about, how, you know, burnout, we notice that we're in burnout when we're like telling ourselves that we can't do things that we enjoy, but we don't do those things we enjoy, but we also don't do the things that we need to do. So what's the best way to kind of have the best of both worlds is to do that thing that we enjoy, build up a little bit energy so that we can do those other tasks that, you know, we got to accomplish, like go to work or get something done for school too.
Exactly. Right. Because you'll stress yourself out thinking like, you'll guilt yourself, honestly. Like, I know I got all this work to do. Like, I would get home and be like, I literally got chapters in this book to read for class. And I'm up here trying to read a book that I just have interest in. Like, it's literally one of those things where you like battle with yourself. It took me a minute, but then I was like, you know what? I just left the class. Like, I can take a break from it. I deserve the break. I've been at work and then I went to class all day. So like, don't guilt yourself out of doing something for you just because you feel like there ain't no time.
Absolutely. And also, in terms of plugging any specific projects, events, things that you have going on that you want our listeners to know about, I know you got big news for us. We had to wait all the way till, you know, March 15th before we could record this episode here. So why don't you go ahead and let us know?
Okay, cool. Bet. So recently on March 15th, I put out my first book. It's called 52 Nights Out. Basically, it's about my experiences here since I've been in Chicago. And I don't know, BJ, you can probably attest to this, about Chicago literally kicking your ass. Like, Chicago is completely different. The winters are harsh. The people are harsh. Like, the city life is crazy. It's completely different from my small Kentucky home. So yeah, like just those experiences or whatever. And I write about different events. I decided that for the first 2 years I lived in Chicago, I was a homebody, work school, because I was so career and professional oriented. But I was like, you know what? I need to take some time to actually like enjoy the city. And I'm more than just these things. So I decided that every week I was going to go out into the city and go to an event and I was going to write about it. And on top of writing about it, so like I would go to an event, but I would write about an existential life question. I also write about my counseling experience in there too as well. And I start off that chapter by saying sometimes your life is the event. And then I talk about not falling off the cliff and just noticing warning signs that led me to get to counseling. So like the book goes through that. If you're interested in finding it, it's on Amazon, 52 Nights Out, More to Life. You can also go look on my Instagram page, OBA1911, and it's the link in my bio.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for being our first telepodcast guests. Hopefully the first of many too, as we don't know how long this pandemic is going to be going on. We don't know how long this social distancing thing is going to be taking place. I tried to do my best of not coughing on air, you know, just to make sure that y'all ears remain safe.
I'll call them as soon as we hang up. I'm calling the CDC. I'm doing it just in case anyway.
I have my water here ready just in case, and I was ready to muffle the mic just in case anything came up, because you know seasonal allergies are a bitch. But sure. Anyways, yeah. So thanks so much for you, Byron, you know, being able to show up today on short notice too. And thank you all listeners for tuning in during these crazy times of uncertainty. If you want to possibly be on the show or ask anything, let me go ahead and drop the ways to contact us. So you can email me at blackpeopletherapy@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at Black People Therapy. You can find us on Facebook, even though I don't know how many people actually still use that as much, but that Facebook page is also Black People Therapy. And you can also find us on Twitter at Black PPL Therapy. So thanks so much for listening, and can't wait to get a new episode out to you guys in the coming weeks. Stay safe, stay healthy. Thanks again, Byron.
Peace. Talk to you later. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye. This concludes another session of Black People Go to Therapy Too. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Black People Therapy, Facebook at Black People Go to Therapy Too, and Twitter at Black PPL Therapy. Thanks.